Welcome to Church Media HQ. My name is Luke Clayton, and I want to thank you for joining us for today's episode. Now, before we get started, please take a moment to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. We're available on just about every podcast platform, as well as on YouTube and on Facebook. And if you are watching on YouTube or Facebook, remember to like this video because that helps it get seen by more church leaders like you. How are you doing?
Hi, Luke. I'm great. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. So give me a little bit of a background about you. Where are you at? Where are you from? And yeah.
Yes. So I'm in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada right now. And this is actually my second time living in this city. I lived here from 1982 to 2003 as a business prof at Crandall University, a private Christian university here. Went away to a couple of different universities, and in 2018, they called me back to be the dean of the International Academic Programs because of the background that I had since I went away. So I always like to say if I hadn't left, I wouldn't have been able to come back.
Nice.
But I've always been bivocational in music ministry in church as well. And as you might tell from my gray hair, for a long time. And I've had several different titles in music ministry and everything from, you know, choir director to worship leader, worship pastor, all kinds of stuff like that. And so most of the time it was an additional paid position. A couple times it was volunteer, but I'm currently the choir director at our local church here. It's called Sunnybury Baptist. And it's actually one of the churches that I served in when I lived here in Moncton the last time. So it's really nice to go back there where there's so many people still there that we knew when we served there before. And of course, this last 13 months have been nothing like anybody would have expected.
Yeah.
But we're getting through it.
Yes. Well, I actually will kind of jump on that first. So you're in Canada. So you guys have really been on the heavy end of the lockdowns. Where are you guys at on all of that, at least in where you're at?
Yeah, well, you know, it's like a lot of places, we've sort of had waves of it come and go, and we were doing really, really well until just recently because of so many cases in India. Of course, Canada has a lot of students coming from India, and so we've actually, as of, I think, maybe Friday, shut down all flights from India. So no flights coming into Canada from India or Pakistan, which really impacts our programs because the majority of our students are from India. Even though we've been working online, teaching online since last March, we've had probably 75 or 80 students come to Canada just since January. But now no one can come in. They've cut it off completely. They've said that's true for at least a month. And our individual province had been doing really well too, except for one little pocket. But now this India variant has showed up here in our province. And so it's putting us at some more lockdowns, affecting my family personally. My daughter has a boy in middle school, and somebody in his school actually has been tested positive for the variant. So there's just a mess of stuff going on there as well.
Well, that's, I am very fortunate. I'm in the Nashville, Tennessee area. So we've been, for lack of better terms, not technically, but we've been really wide open for, I mean, at this point, for probably 6 months. And even this time last year, we started loosening up. So I've talked to different church leaders from all different, you know, parts of the country and of the world. And I always have to take a moment and say, oh, yep, I've got it made compared to you guys. So, I'm sorry to hear that you guys are being personally affected by that. We'll certainly be praying for you there and hoping all, everybody recovers and, or steers clear of catching it. Yeah. And so I am in the process of trying to pull up the notes that you sent. I don't know why, but my computer is being, I tried to pull it up on my iPad and now I'm kind of going back up here trying to pull it on this, my computer here. But I do remember that you submitted something about talking about, what was it? It was, I believe, recovering from COVID, kind of churches recovering. And then an interesting topic about the value of choirs in church, which I think that's very exciting there. So, but since we're already on the COVID topic, what for you, again, we'll just kind of start with your personal experience. I know you've kind of already given us a little bit of an idea of what you've dealt with, what you're dealing with, but the church you're in there, how are you guys responding? And how has this kind of maybe even changed your approach to ministry?
Yeah, you know, I like to, for all of the bad news that comes from COVID, I really think the church in general has been blessed by being forced to go online. Even some of the smallest rural churches that I know of, you know, in New Brunswick particularly, are doing their level best. And sometimes it's pretty low key. But the beauty of it is, as we are seeing, is that I think it's sort of the idea that, you know, there's no going back. We're out there now, we're online, we've seen the value of it. And I know for our church individually, we've hugely ramped up compared to what we were doing before. Well, we weren't doing anything online except for, you know, what we had in our website and Facebook pages and stuff like that, but no live streaming or broadcasting or anything along those lines. And now, even though we're restricted in numbers, we are back to in-person services, limited in numbers. But we live stream every Sunday morning on YouTube. And I really am quite proud of, you know, what they've been able to accomplish. It's been hard for things like, you know, children's ministry and all of the choirs at the different levels, children's choir, adult choir, bell choirs, all those things. Most of them aren't operating at all. We've installed cameras in the church that we never had before. The people who are on the platform are adjusting to all of the nuances, you know, like we did some of the services before when we taped portions, you know, and you'd say, you know, good morning. Well, you know, you realize maybe it isn't morning when they're watching it, you know, so you just be a bit more generic about terminology you use and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And even a simple thing too, like, you know, if you're in church on Sunday and you're broadcasting, those people who are in the church know who you are, obviously. But what we need to realize is that there's people watching online who don't have a clue who you are. And so unless somebody at least introduces you or puts a banner on the bottom saying, you know, this is pastor, whatever, you're really missing out on a connection for them. So I've been trying to encourage our people to make sure that they don't miss out on that opportunity, you know, because the worship leader will start and nobody ever knows even his name, you know, the pastor gets up to preach, nobody even knows his name, you know. So those are little things that you learn along the way. And I think they're things, Luke, that are going to improve our worship services, you know, as time goes on, regardless of whether we're online. But I think now that we've started the live streaming too, I don't think we'll ever stop.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. So if I understand you right, your church was not really doing any type of online broadcast of your sermons at all.
Nothing. Really. Yeah.
Were you recording them at least and putting them out on, you know? Oh, so wow. So this is truly, you got kind of thrust into it. Which it's interesting how many churches I've heard a similar story of. To me, you know, I just think, no, everybody's live streaming. And a lot of people assume that. But because I think it's one of those things that more or less it does take some investment to, you know, get up and going to some extent. Of course, there's different levels. You can go very high level or you can just go basics to get started. But either way, there's an investment of resource and then of time and figuring it all out, the technical side of things. And what I've kind of noticed was it seemed like there was a lot of the churches that were like, it's kind of something that was on their list. They knew they needed to be doing it.
Yeah.
And this thrust them right into it. Yeah. Now let me ask you this, just because something else that I've noticed is kind of common is the online giving. Were you guys offering that before? Or
No, there wasn't. And again, an interesting thing happened, and I've heard of a number of churches who said this. And so I've asked my pastor what sort of his idea was, but we have a lot more people who are giving because we've gone online, mm-hmm. you know, with e-transfer and stuff like this. And not only more people giving, but more people are giving more. And so when I talked to the pastor about this, he said, well, here's what I think it is. You know, people in church on Sunday morning can put $5 in the offering plate and be somewhat anonymous about it. Mm-hmm. But boys, when you do it online and your name's attached to the electronic fund transfer, you look a little cheap just putting $5 in. So, you know, you put 5 or 10 or 20 or whatever, right? And so our giving has really done very well, even in the midst of the pandemic. And again, I think that's another thing that's not going to go away. I think people realize now, you know, that, you know, yeah, $5 might be all right, but, you know, this is 2021, you know, when everything yeah. costs 15 times more, you know. And so if you've been putting $5 in for 5 years, like, it's time to change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's kind of a two-way street there for the churches. They say, well, you know, this does make, there's a lot of advantages on the church side. Obviously, it makes things a little more convenient, more streamlined to process. You don't have to make as much of a physical deposit, you know, with checks and whatnot. But then also a great feature and most online giving platforms offer something like this is you could set up some type of recurring gift. And so that just kind of guarantees from a business perspective, that residual income, you know. But then, on the giver side, that, I never really thought about it from that perspective. You know, yeah, they got to put their name attached to it. They can't just drop that cash in there. And now they've got to look, you know, actually, hey, yeah, I don't want to look cheap. And not to mention, if they do offer that recurring option, a lot of people might say, well, you know, it makes it easy for me to just make sure I'm giving, you know, so a lot of it. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, for those, again, that this pandemic kind of made churches, because from what I've noticed is the majority of churches, either they didn't have anything before and they adopted it, or they already had it, but they just weren't really leaning into it. And now they're really leaning into it, yeah. And pushing people to give online. And I do think that is here to stay and going to play a much bigger role in giving moving forward. In fact, I don't even know of many churches that are passing a plate anymore.
Right.
And, you know, they might do some type of Dropbox or something, you know, yeah. But this online giving thing is going to really change things moving forward. And I think for the good, I think that's one of those, yeah. Again, just like you were talking about with online, ministry in terms of your worship services. I think that's great. You know, kind of circling back to some of the stuff you said there, you know, you kind of alluded to the idea that what you're putting out there is not just reaching your immediate audience. I mean, it's something that, I mean, somebody years from now could stumble on and, you know, they could be reached by that and impacted by that. And that's why it's important you keep that in mind. Like I said, I love what you brought out about make sure you introduce yourself and that you, you know, provide some of that basic information that seems redundant to maybe in the moment, but to someone who's never been connected with you before and yeah. stumbles across you online. Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. So yeah, a lot of great thoughts there. Well, let's dive into this second topic, if you're all right. I think it actually fits well here because you were talking about your choirs, and now choir ministry now seems a little more difficult than ever because, well, it's a big group, you know, people got to somewhat stand close together. That's kind of two strikes against it. And so I don't know what angle you want to come at this from. I mean, we can look at it from a philosophical standpoint, but also just, I guess, a logistics standpoint right now. So you mentioned, I think you already said this, but are you able to do much choir ministry right now?
No, not much at all. The thing that we have managed to accomplish, we probably have about 25 in our choir when it's, you know, full complement. But since March of last year, we've done four, I think, maybe five virtual choir events. So what I do is I send the track and the music to the individual choir members. They record their videos at home. Our tech guy you know, sews them together and we come up with this nice choir piece. And they've been really quite effective. And the members that do participate have really enjoyed them. And it was interesting because when I sent out the email inviting these people for Easter, one of the gals responded, oh, I was hoping you would do that, you know. And so she was happy to see it. Now, there are many people, obviously, in our choir who are older, maybe, and they're not comfortable with the technology, whatever, so they haven't participated. There's some people who just aren't interested in being videotaped, you know, and so they don't want to participate either. But it has served the purpose, and it has, you know, kept our choir together to a certain degree. I try to send them emails regularly, you know, and reminding them of people's birthdays and stuff like this. But this has been an effective thing, to a certain degree. And it was interesting because on the Easter Sunday, the piece that we did, I mean, I'm still not heading to the church myself. I'm watching on live or on screen at home live, but they played the Easter piece and I could hear in the background people in the church applauding, you know. Mm-hmm. And so even from a virtual choir perspective, they still, you know, appreciate the effort and whatnot that goes into it. And I do not anticipate that we will have in-person choir at least until the fall again.
Yeah. So, I'm glad you started talking about the virtual choir there, because I've seen that. That's kind of been something that many churches have done. Some do it well, some don't. And so I do, you kind of started talking there, but yeah, I have talked to guys and said, hey, you know, have you seen this virtual choir thing? And they're like, that sounds really good, but how do you do that? You know, how do you actually, you know, make that work? And so I like how you kind of gave us a breakdown there. So just to circle back to that a little bit, you said you send the recording and you send your content over to your individual choir members, and then they're recording themselves individually, correct?
So they use earbuds so that all the technician gets is an audio of the vocals.
Okay.
He has the track and he dumps the vocals onto the tracks. It puts them in sync, obviously. And then he does, you know, nice things with the graphics and brings people in at different times and adds some background picture and stuff like that. You know, whatever. Really does an amazing, he actually makes this look and sound really good. When you consider there's usually only about 8 or 9 of us that participate in this, and it really turns out to be a wonderful result in the end.
Yeah. So I've not edited anything like this, but I would be curious, and this is probably a question more specifically for the guy who's editing them, but I wonder how much actual, you know, time and effort it takes on a production standpoint. Do you have any idea of, you know,
I do. He said it takes him about 8 hours to do one song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is a big job, and I really do appreciate the effort he puts into it. So he's probably glad that we don't do this every week.
Yeah. Well, but again, we kind of go back to what we were saying earlier. When you produce it in that way, and obviously he's taking the time to make sure it sounds good. I'm sure he has to mute some people every once in a while when they go off key. You know, he's making sure it sounds good. But then now you've got a well produced piece. And it's going to live forever, if you will. And so I think that's really cool. Jeremy is just joining us. You got here just in time for what you wanted to talk about. We just got into the choir conversation here. It's really cool that you guys are doing the virtual choir. That to me is something that when I've seen it done and done right, it is very powerful. And
some of our members have also participated. Lifeway did a couple of virtual choir numbers, and 4 or 5 of our choir members participated in those as well. Oh, so wow. There were like 40, 50 people in those choir numbers, and that was really neat to do that as well.
Yeah, oh, that's cool. Well, I'm glad we walked through, you know, anybody out there who might want to try it there. That's there. There's just a quick little brief step-by-step process, because I've had people ask, they're like, well, what do you do? I'll get on one big Zoom call. It's like, well, no, because that's going to be, you know, delays and lagging and all that comes along with it. But
And the beauty is, you're right, because I remember even with one of the pieces we did recently, I remember my time was off coming in on a word or something like that. So I alerted the technician ahead of time. And when he got to it, he just muted me. And we kept right on going. Nobody ever knew I made a mistake or anything, you know, so it was great.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So, well, let's maybe take a step back here and let's talk about the idea of a choir and worship from more of a, maybe like I said, a philosophical level. And this is where Jeremy's really going to eat this up. What we're seeing now is the trend to really where a lot of churches aren't having a worship experience that includes a choir. For some, the reason is, well, you know, just limitations of people. But then others choose to do it for other reasons. So I'm curious to see, you know, kind of what your thoughts are on this. And I'd love, like I said, I think Jeremy's going to have a lot to say here as we get into this topic.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, you know, I've been at this a long time and I've, been teaching people to sing since I was about 15, because I've done children's choirs and everything right along the way. And so I'm a full proponent of choirs in churches. One of the things that I guess it doesn't seem like much of an argument for me is there's not enough people. I mean, the churches today are growing all the time. There's all kinds of people in churches, but they don't seem to be interested in promoting choirs. I've been a worship leader. I've led worship teams. And so I know all that, you know, whatever. But there seems to be one stream of, you know, upfront ministry, and that is the worship team only. And I really think the church is missing a lot today by not having choirs. First of all, it's a great ministry for the individual in the choir, you know, not, you know, just for the congregation only, but we are social beings, and choirs are social activities. And while there's people who want to get connected with children's ministry, or they want to get connected with small groups, or they want to get connected with, you know, marriage groups or whatever, there are people who are musically inclined, and not everybody can serve on the worship team. So what do all the rest of those people do, right? And so that's where I think the choir can serve a huge purpose. And there's still lots of great choir music out there that's being produced. I'm a member of a couple of the choral clubs, you know, and there's more than enough stuff that you could ever use, and of varying degrees of difficulty. So whether you've got a choir of six or you've got a choir of 60, the material is out there.
Thanks again for joining us for this episode, and don't forget to subscribe. You can check the show notes and video description to learn more about products and services from Church Media HQ, as well as details about our guests and content contributors. Speaking of the content, if you find it helpful, please take a moment to leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with other church leaders like you. Also, be sure to check out our newest show, Connection Culture. This is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Church Media HQ is a production of the Must Increase Network. The show is edited and produced by Bo Snyder. The creator and executive producer is myself, Luke Clayton. And until next time, I want to remind you to try something new. Why? You know why. Because it's so much better to fail at trying the incredible than it is to succeed at simply doing the average. We'll see you next time right here on Church Media HQ.